You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
First of all, can you tell us, you know, what are the parallels that you have drawn between today's financial crisis with that of the financial panic of 1873?
Yes, the similarities are kind of astonishing. In the 1870s, you see a world that's largely free trade, in which there's the biggest trading powers are committed to regular low tariff barriers. Britain, France, Germany, Austria-Hungary are all trading freely. And in this environment, we see a new competitor emerge, and that new from the West. In this case, the new competitor from the West is the United States, which begins shipping large quantities of cheap wheat. And like the modern context in which we see Western commodities flowing from China, India, and elsewhere into the U.S. and European markets, there's this new competitor. In this environment, in this sort of trading environment, there are a whole bunch of expectations about what the economy is going to look like that collapse. And the center of that collapse is the mortgage market. A whole bunch of new banks form in the 1860s in Germany and France and in Austria-Hungary, offering mortgages at relatively low rate to folks, particularly for middling classes, for artisans, for workers. And these banks are engage in what's called a sort of orgy of lending. They're lending to lots of people for half-built or unbuilt homes. And around 1870, in this context, the British banks raise the interbank lending rate. They're concerned about the overlending in Europe. They're concerned about, given these new competitors, that Eastern Europe, Central Europe, Western Europe may not be able to fund this boom, support this boom. And when the interbank lending rate goes up, there are all sorts of other problems, very much like the situation that we saw, where the interbank lending rate went up in June or July of 2007. Likewise, the interbank lending rate went up in May of 1873. And when the interbank lending rate goes up, credit and international commerce start to seize up, and we see all sorts of problems, the biggest one being all sorts of new financial instruments that have been developed that collapse. In the 1870s, it's railroads. In the 21st century, of course, it's banks that have financial instruments that are based on these sort of mortgage-backed securities.
Okay, but then, you know, there are a lot of economists and also politicians that are actually equating what's happening in 2008, the meltdown in 2008, to 1929 Great Depression, though. So for you, why do you think it's more similar to 1873 and not 1929?
1929 is just very different. 1929, you see high tariffs all over the world, and there's already a kind of imperial system that has chopped up the world into all sorts of different pieces. You see problems with 1929 has much more to do with the gold standard and much more to do with Germany's inability to pay back loans from World War I or indemnities from World War I. The overall situation is very different. The problem centrally in the 1929 panic, as many economists have argued, has to do with manufacturing inventories, over large manufacturing inventories. And in the 21st century, most manufacturers have resolved this problem. They very, very carefully manage their inventories with just-in-time manufacturing. We see very small inventories in even the very largest companies because they understand that consumption is going to increase or decrease. 1929 is much more to do with lots and lots of factories with far too many goods unable to sell them in that economy. It's really a kind of industrial economy that moves into a banking economy. The 1870s and the 21st century are much more a kind of financial banking panic that moves into other industries and creates pipeline problems.
If there are such striking similarities between 1873 and the present turmoil, what were the ramifications in 1973 panic? Could those methods be actually applied today?
I think the lessons of the 1870s panic are very useful for the modern panic. I think in the 1870s, what we see is it's a very serious depression, but there are winners and losers in the 1870s. There are certain key industries that succeed very well. In the U.S. contest, for example, Andrew Carnegie, John D. Rockefeller, mm-hmm. and Cyrus McCormick, for example, also Gustavus Swift. There are certain industries that have lots of cash on hand. Those industries that have lots of cash are safest, and they're able to buy up their competitors at fire sale prices by 1875 and 1876. And so this is the era when we see the U.S. Steel emerge as, Carnegie Steel emerges as a kind of, it buys up its competitors. Standard Oil buys up most of its competitors. That's Rockefeller's company. McCormick's International Harvester buys up many of its smaller competitors. So in 1870s, because of the sort of credit crunch, because the banks aren't functioning properly, because international trade isn't functioning properly, you see those industries that have cash on hand are in a situation to be independent of banks for a certain amount of time. And because of their independence, they're able to buy up their competitors. So the beginnings of the Gilded Age in the U.S. are really in the 1870s, when you see lots of corporate consolidation, merging, and the creation of very large integrated corporations in this period.
So for today, you mentioned about Carnegie and also Rockefeller emerging as winners. Mm-hmm. So for today, would it be people like Warren Buffett?
It might be people like Warren Buffett, but it might also be, well, the Tati, the steel industry in India, for example, that is building new plants entirely out of cash, not using any lending at all. There are some mortgage companies in the U.S. and in Europe that are buying up properties in larger cities that are able to do it entirely with cash. I think it's possible that somebody like Warren Buffett could be ahead, but it might also be industries that were not that are have done quite well, have a large cash flow, and it's difficult to gauge what those industries are. One example that just kind of off the top of my head is Microsoft. Microsoft, it turns out, has always had a problem of having too much cash on hand. It's been one of their kind of peculiar problems, even as they've faced other difficulties in the last 10 or 20 years. They've had a lot of cash. So one of the, in some ways, when you kind of look at these other industries, certain industries that end up with lots of cash, I think, are likely to be in a position to leverage that cash to defeat their competitors. And it won't be necessarily the industries that we think of, and probably and might not be the biggest capitalists or industrialists, individuals necessarily, that'll succeed.